My passion for media started actually on my high school newspaper. And every night, basically, we had to come together and put out a newspaper 5 days a week. And I absolutely loved it. The way I see it, being a product manager is in many ways very much like being a newspaper editor. How do you continue to make your process more efficient over time? How do you stay flexible to make fast pivots when you need to? These are all problems that are present in the newsroom and in product management. And they're all problems that I love.
Why do some companies succeed in driving growth while others fail? How do some individuals advance in their careers to lead teams that change industries? In the age of mobile, these are the stories of the companies shaping the way we interact with our world and the people who drive their growth. Hi everyone! We are happy to have our next guest, Caitlin Roman, Director of Growth Product at The Athletic. Caitlin is a talented product leader, having grown through her work at both Medium and LinkedIn. Before her career in product, Caitlin worked as a consultant for McKinsey & Company and also worked for the Gates Foundation. So, welcome to the show, Caitlin. Super excited to have you with us today.
Thanks, Mata. I'm really excited to be here.
So before we go into, you know, your story, how you got to where you are today, tell us maybe a bit about your role today with The Athletic for those listeners who don't know it.
Yes. So I lead growth product at The Athletic. The Athletic is a sports media subscription service. We have over 400 journalists across the US, UK, Canada, reporting on all in-depth sports analysis and news that you'd be interested in. And on the growth product side, we're thinking about how do we build relationships with users and take them sort of through their journey with The Athletic from their first encounter with us all the way through to subscribing and retaining them as subscribers.
Super interesting. So, you know, growth sometimes sits in marketing, product. It sounds like this is part of the product organization. What are your like main KPIs as you think about for your team?
We actually do sit within the marketing organization. Cool. My boss is the SVP of marketing, but we are a full-fledged product organization within that as well. Yeah. So it's actually been a really great change that we've made in the last 4 or 5 months to really unify marketing and product, and so that we all are organized around the same KPIs. And so to that question, we are looking at essentially subscription metrics. So KPIs for the acquisition team would be how many new subscribers are we adding. On the lifecycle team, which is also part of the growth product org, it's about how do we keep our subscribers engaged and active on the platform. So it's really kind of all those different funnel metrics that lead up to engaged and retained subscribers.
It's super interesting. Just one more follow-up question on this. I think I've seen companies who have whole teams. Do you just have product in this team, or do you actually have engineers who build these products, or do you have to work with the engineering team for that?
Oh yeah, definitely engineers. So it's a full cross-functional team. Yeah. So the way the growth product org is set up, we actually have three component teams: acquisition, pricing, and lifecycle. And each of those teams is, well, we're hiring more engineers week by week, but each of those teams works with engineering and with design and with analytics and of course marketing as a fully cross-functional pod.
That's fascinating, and that's very different than some other guests we've had on the show. And it's really interesting. I think there's probably move a lot faster than the orgs where, you know, there's a cross-functional team, but people still sit in different orgs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every time you need to wait and sort of ask, oh, do we have resourcing? Do we not? It just creates bottlenecks and it's not as efficient. So we really love this more cross-functional way of working.
Very cool. I'd love to hear where your passion for media began. What shapes your mindset when approaching the work you do today?
My passion for media started actually on my high school newspaper. I was the editor-in-chief for 2 years there, and the paper wasn't in great shape, so I basically sort of built this whole news organization from scratch.
Wow.
And then after that, I became an editor on the Yale Daily News in college, and every night, basically, we had to come together and put out a newspaper 5 days a week. It was insane, very stressful, and I absolutely loved it. It was a great group of people. And so I guess the way I see it, being a product manager is in many ways is very much like being a newspaper editor. And you're basically coordinating this group of people toward a common goal. You're making a product basically day after day, which is the newspaper. Very similar problems, right? Like how do you motivate and inspire that group? How do you continue to make your process more efficient over time? How do you stay flexible to make fast pivots when you need to? These are all problems that are present in the newsroom and in product management. And they're all problems that I love. So that's sort of how the two tie together for me.
I love it. But after college, you know, your first job was actually very similar to mine. I also went straight to consulting.
Yeah.
You went and worked for McKinsey. We've actually had other people on the show who also went first into consulting and then into either product management, growth, or marketing. Tell us a bit about the decision to do that. And now looking back, how important are those skills? And should others who are maybe, you know, graduating now and thinking about a career, is consulting a good next step to go into a growth or product career?
Yes, I think for me, consulting was a great opportunity to build some of the skills that I use every day in my job, which are around communication and structure and strategy. So for me, it's been a great building block. I will say, like, I believe that you should pursue jobs and that you're interested in. So if you're not interested at all in consulting, but you think that it's somehow going to get you into product management, I would strongly advise against that because I think you're just kind of painting yourself into a corner where you're not actually doing something that you're going to be passionate about and love. So I really liked being a consultant. I thought it was a fun way to experience different industries, different companies, and to gain skills along the way. That said, I didn't want to stay in it forever, but for me, it has ended up being a really great building block.
And then the other part that I was fascinating in when I was looking at your LinkedIn is you actually went and worked for the Gates Foundation in Ethiopia. Tell us about what made you make that decision and then how did you end up at LinkedIn after that?
So yeah, going to Ethiopia was a huge leap of faith in many ways.
Yeah.
I had never been to Africa. I didn't know anyone in Ethiopia. I had never worked in agriculture.
Wow.
But at the same time, I had the sense that it would be an amazing experience and it really was. I think in terms of making that decision, it was really about this idea that the unknown would be rewarding.
Mm.
And that was really, and that there were elements in it. I had studied ethics, politics, and economics in college, where I was focused on international political economy that had a component related to Africa. So I thought, you know, tying in with that academic experience. But at the end of the day, it was a leap of faith. And I guess one thing that I learned, there were a number of really challenging moments that I was more resilient than I actually thought I was. So just as one example to tell a story, I actually broke my back in Kenya while I was climbing through a canyon and I was entirely alone. I had to, you know, figure out how to get back to Nairobi, how to get to the hospital, how to navigate a recovery of a broken back while living in Addis, back at work. And I was able to do that. It was really painful, but I did it. So that was sort of one lesson, I guess, but more so on a professional level, I learned how to deal with a slower pace than I was used to and work with people of different backgrounds. And, you know, I'm still very driven and very on top of things, but I did mellow out a good deal while I was there and gained an understanding of how to influence different kinds of people in different ways. That was a great lesson as well. And I guess the final thing was that I realized how important being in a growth environment is for me. And that's one of the main reasons I actually decided to go to LinkedIn after business school.
What was your role at LinkedIn?
At LinkedIn, I was in business operations, which is, it's a lot of former consultants, but it's not an internal strategy group. It's really integrated. Each business operations person is integrated into the business unit and working hand in hand with product managers and others on the team so that it's really part of that operational team, something I really loved.
From the transition from, I think many people sometimes wonder how they can get into growth or product. How did you make that transition? What do you think helped you? What made you even decide to go in that direction?
In terms of how that happened, it was at LinkedIn. I was in business operations. And so I think being in that role, being very close to the business really helped me to understand what was going on in the subscription business and understand the metrics at a really deep level. So when a product role opened up, the product manager who I was working with at the time left, it was a very natural segue to say, hey, you know, I actually don't know how to do product, but I do know about this business and about our strategy. And I've been helping craft that for the last year. And so I was able to pivot that way. The easiest way to get into product is to not have it be a total, you know, 180 turn, but rather to have some context on the business so that you're not learning everything from scratch all at once.
Super interesting. How did you end up at The Athletic? What made you choose? I mean, that kind of goes in line with your, I can see the whole story, but I want to hear it from you. How long have you been there and how did you end up in your role today?
So to connect the dots, for I was at LinkedIn, and then I decided to go to Medium, which is a media subscription business, and sort of continuing that passion for media. And then in terms of The Athletic, I have been following The Athletic for a while and was really excited about what they were doing in terms of a quality content that's being monetized via subscription only and not ads. And that's the same as Medium. Medium doesn't have ads either. And so that business model of subscription, where I think the value is really linked between what you're giving and then this, you know, the subscriber chooses to stay if they believe they're getting value. And then if not, they churn. And so it's a very direct relationship as opposed to advertising. So I was really excited about what The Athletic was doing and the types of content that they were producing. And the role also just really lined up with what I was doing before in terms of growth product teams. We talked a little bit about the model, but having a fully aligned product engineering, design, marketing team, all anchored around this concept of the funnel and growth, I think is a really powerful way to drive the business. And so when I realized that they were looking for someone to build out that team, it seemed like a great fit.
So it's probably been an interesting journey. You, this past year, I think, has been very different for all companies. When you think about your 2020, what do you think are some highlights and some low points?
Well, let's start with the low points. That was definitely when COVID hit in March and sports stopped, really just, you know, came to a screeching halt. And we pivoted really quickly to offer a 90-day free trials just in the space of a few days. And we also offered extensions through our cancellation flow for subscribers who might have said, hey, you know, sports aren't playing right now. Why should I keep the subscription? And those changes carried us through a rough period until sports picked back up in midsummer, just to keep people interested and engaged. And our newsroom did an amazing job coming up with content even when sports weren't playing. And then in terms of the high, we had a big launch in September. We introduced different content formats. We added short form, which is essentially like Twitter in our app, and then also breaking news. And in line with that, we also launched an introductory offer of $1 a month for a set period of time. And that was a first for us. And that performed really well. And we did that again during Black Friday, which again was a big growth spike. And so now we have an interesting challenge of how do we monitor retention of these cohorts, understand their willingness to pay. These are different types of subscribers than we've had in the past. But that sort of growth unlock through different types of introductory offers was pretty cool on the growth side.
How do you measure it? Do you have any tips for others who are facing similar challenges?
It's all about the cohort, right? Like, how do you sort of understand how the ways in which people come into your subscription, the means by which they were acquired, the type of plan that they're on, the time of year, what sports they follow? All of these are characteristics that can start to help you group different subscribers that may be similar to one another, and you can follow them as they go and understand what they're interested in and what their willingness to pay might be, what their engagement levels are. And then you can tailor your strategies to retain them around that. So for example, if someone is, or if a cohort is less engaged and, you know, you're seeing that come through in the data, maybe you're sending different types of emails, you're sending different types of push notifications, you're trying to get them to follow more leagues or teams so that you can send the right content to them. So those are all engagement strategies, but they're only relevant if the cohort is having an engagement problem. Whereas if you're seeing low willingness to pay on the cohort, then you might actually want to tailor your win-back strategy differently instead and think about different price points to win them back on, given that lower willingness to pay. So it all starts with understanding the cohort, and then you tailor your strategies accordingly.
That's really interesting. How do you think about challenges for 2021? Do you think, you know, this will be an interesting year, a year of transition, maybe a year of getting back? What do you think the biggest challenges will be, and how are you planning to like prepare yourselves for them?
Yeah, definitely. Well, hoping it's going to be a big year on the sports front for sure. In terms of the growth side, we've been investing a lot in search as a major discovery channel over the last couple of months. We've built out a team there, have a great team that are growing search significantly. So that raises a fun question for us on the growth side, which is what do we do with this search traffic that's coming that may be less intentional, as search traffic often is? And what do we do with these folks when they come to our site? So that's something we're going to be looking at in terms of what are new growth pathways and ways to form relationships with users, maybe not immediately converting them to subscribers, but instead trying to cultivate a relationship over time, which is something we haven't done as much to date.
Very interesting. How do you think about that in a subscription business? Are you going to is there any free content, or are you going to send them certain content that they can get access to before they become subscribers?
We have an initial experiment that's actually going out probably next week, which is around a registration wall. And so asking someone to, on that first piece of content, give us their email address instead of directly subscribing. And in that case, yes, they would get that piece of content essentially in exchange for the email address rather than for paying money. And then over the long term, we will be looking at building out other pieces of content and different types of access that we might want to give users who aren't ready to pay us right away.
I think one of the things, as I'm hearing you talk through, some of the changes and the unknown, it makes me go back to that initial thing that you said, where it feels like going to Ethiopia prepared you for the, unknown. How much do you think that has played in this weird year where there was so much unknown, there was so much uncertainty?
Yeah, definitely a lot. I think one thing I think that growth teams can do really well is just stay resilient and ready to experiment and learn new things. And that's definitely something that I've been really proud of with the team to date. We keep experimenting, we keep sort of being willing to assimilate new information and change our view of the world as information comes in and changes. So I think always wanting to be ready and willing to change your mind is critical.
I love that. And I think that's one that I had to learn firsthand. I think I've gotten feedback in the past that I can be like stubborn in my ways.
Yeah.
The more I understand that when people suggest things and stuff, just try testing. I should say anything as long as it's a test, right? Say yes to anything as long as it's a test. You just never know.
Yeah, definitely. And different perspectives too. People may come in with a different take on something based on past experience or a different way they're looking at the data. So how do you create teams that are and cultivate that in yourself, that you're open to listening to that?
I love that. I think that's really, really great advice. So, kind of going from that, it feels like we're already starting to go into the next question, which is, what is your leadership style? How do you build and grow a team?
I would say my leadership style is a blend of two things, which may seem a little contradictory at first, but one is a drive for excellence, and the second is deep care and investment in people. And on the first side, I set a really high bar, and I am upfront with my teams about this from the beginning. I set a high bar for myself, and then I also set that for my team. I think that role modeling is really important here. You can't expect other people to deliver great work if you aren't consistently doing that yourself. If you're not communicating clearly and tying up loose ends, creating strategic clarity, that's all on you. And then as you raise the bar, that mode of excellence kind of vibrates outward. So then the whole team starts operating on a higher level. That's one of my favorite things, when that sort of clicks on the team and you can just start to see that in the interactions. On the second dimension, I care at a really deep level about the people on my team and enabling them to succeed. And that's not just my direct reports, but it's also cross-functional partners. And over the years, I've spent a lot of time, I coach behind the scenes and try to create opportunities for the people on my teams. And I think that's actually one of the most fun and meaningful parts of my job.
So it sounds like, you're the type of leader that when you think about the achievements, is the whole team. But I think for this next question, I wanna ask you about one achievement. It is your achievement. I think we tend to be humble as women and always use we. And tell me a story or something that you're really proud of in your career that's unique to you, and not your team, but actually your win.
I think it's a great question, and I love that you guys ask this. It's awesome. So my achievement would be that I can transform organizations. I've done this twice now at Medium and at The Athletic, where I've basically been able to build from the ground up a high performance growth organization with a really strong positive culture that matters a lot to me, and a place where people are proud to do their best work. And I think what's fun about it is that I'm getting better at how I do it each time. So it probably took me about a year and a half to get to that place at Medium where I felt really good. And at The Athletic, we were in a pretty good spot at about 6 months after I joined. And even on our team now, we keep getting better month after month. And I've built out the team with some really talented PMs who are doing their own amazing work. And so that, to me, that organizational transformation is what I'd call out.
And you've had a really great career, some really great experiences. What advice do you have for others who are maybe earlier in their career and want to become a leader, want to get into growth? What's your advice for the younger generation?
My advice would go back to that point we were talking about earlier around flexibility, which is just not be overly focused on developing a plan or having a specific idea of where you want to go. If you had told me in college or even at McKinsey that I would be a product manager, I would have asked you, what is that? I have no idea. So for me, each step in my career has been this natural pivot from one thing to the next. And I've learned to trust my instincts about what that next thing is and not worry too much about the second and third steps after that. I think that works well when you have a strong sense of what matters to you.
Yeah.
Understand what you want to learn, where you want to develop, and let that guide you in what you do next. And so right now, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing in 10 years or even 5 years, and I'm totally okay with that.
And I think the prerequisite to do that is actually to know yourself and to know what you're interested in. I think people sometimes struggle. I definitely struggled with this in my early career. Any advice to figuring that part out?
Yeah. I have a slightly more tactical piece of advice, which is journaling. I've been a big journaler ever since I was little. I think I started my first diary at 5 years old or something. But more recently, probably dating from around business school, I started keeping a work journal as well as a personal journal. And I will write, you know, every month or two. It doesn't have to be super frequent, but writing about, these are the things that I'm really enjoying right now. These are the frustrations I have. Here are the feedback that I would give myself. I use this as an opportunity because sometimes, you know, you're not getting great feedback from your manager or from your peers. How can you take a step back and diagnose, here's some areas where I want to improve. And maybe that's also based on feedback you're getting.
Yeah.
But find some way to push yourself to do that self-examination. I found journaling to be a really great way to do that and to build that self-knowledge.
It's really interesting. I think I try to get one thing from every podcast. I think this is going to be my like thing to do. I've been thinking about journaling for so long, but I just never really, and I have friends who do it and find value. And sometimes I'm like, maybe this is the time when I'm going to actually start it.
Yeah, I love that.
So I think, you know, sometimes we have these fun questions and sometimes we start with them, sometimes we end with them. I think in your case, it would be interesting to like end with them.
Yeah.
They're a little bit weird and a little bit out of the box. But I think one of the things I like is to make the people we interview human and make sure that people feel like comfortable reaching out after the podcast. So let's go with it.
Great.
The first one, if you had to delete all the apps on your phone and you could only keep one app, what app would you keep?
This is very basic, but I would keep my photos app. I'm the documentarian among my friends. I'm always the one taking pictures and sending them around. And for me, photos are a way to make sense of the passage of time, being able to look back and scroll back and relive that history. So I would keep the photos app.
I love it. I don't think I've ever had that answer before, but that's probably the one I would keep. So I love that. I'm like the documenter of Branch. Whenever my RCO creates like slides, it's like, oh, and these are from Mada's Facebook.
<That's>
All the
great
pictures from our early
exactly
founder days.
You always want the pictures.
And they all want it now. So they go on my Facebook. So I think it's so important and you don't like realize how important it is until years later where you're like, oh man, I wish I had pictures that remind me of that time.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. If you had an app that enabled you to talk to one animal and one animal alone, what would it be? It can be a type of animal or one specific animal, depending.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with an octopus on this. I don't know.
I love that.
I don't know if anyone's watched the movie My Octopus Teacher on Netflix, but it was amazing. I highly recommend. We'll give a plug here. And I felt totally in love with octopuses. They're so intelligent. They have so much going on beneath the surface. And that movie just really brings to life the whole inner life. But I also don't like cold water, so I would never be able to spend that amount of time underwater that he did getting to know the octopus.
So Mick, who helps me produce the podcast, has suggested this to me a few times. I have heard of it. I'm a pescatarian, but I don't eat octopus because of octopus. I just can't. I know it's tasty, but I love them so much. So That's very cool. They're intelligent and they have such a weird, different life than ours. It would be like so interesting to hear what they say.
Exactly.
Okay, last one. One app on your phone that's like kind of surprising, that people that know you would find a little bit surprising.
talked about this on the panel the other month, but I would go with the CVS Pharmacy app here. I am an obsessive coupon clipper. Truly gives me no greater pleasure than when I get, you know, 45% off on a single visit to CVS. So that helps me know what's on sale and where all my coupons are.
Oh man, you and my co-founder Mike, you guys would really get along. He always thinks I overspend on things. So I love that. Well, with that, I think this was, you know, I learned a lot. I have my few things I'm going to change, including journaling. And it was just really great to hear your stories and get to know you better. Thank you so much for your time today, Caitlin.
Thank you. This is a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to this and share with someone trying to grow their career. Until next time, keep growing.